Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Greetings, Earthlings, and welcome to our extra credit episode for September, a month of science fiction here on Strange Studies of Strange Stories. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. We're not the only ones having a month of science fiction. There are aliens in the news.
I heard that some space aliens testified before Mexican Congress. Is that what happened? Or they were elected to office? It was something like that.
That's not quite right, but we'll talk about it.
Okay. Well, because there are aliens in the news, we actually thought we'd talk about the movie Fire in the Sky from the 90s. It's one I'd never really watched all the way through. Had you seen it before?
No.
Had you heard about it?
Oh, yeah. It was a big deal, and I think it freaked out a lot of people.
It seems like it always pops up in those 100 scariest movie moments types of shows.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to it in a second, but my mind has been on science fiction all month, and there were some other properties that I've been watching I wanted to talk about just a little. So this will be about Fire in the Sky, but then also a bit of a sci-fi roundup or potpourri.
Yeah, let's do it.
When we were kicking ideas around for this extra credit, it was kind of hard to settle on something. And I think it might be related a little to the consternation we've had this month over what the genre science fiction even means. We've been doing science fiction since the inception of the show. I mean, H.P. Lovecraft was a horror writer, but he was also a science fiction writer.
Yep.
And combining those genres is part of what makes him a novel writer. So these types of stories have come up throughout the run of the show. But I think now that we've broadened the focus, we're doing more kinds of science fiction, or we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, what are the big classics of the genre? It's starting to make me ask, what does this even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because as we've seen, you know, horror can express so many things, but it has a narrow focus. At the end of the day, it's what are all these different ways that you can be scared or creeped out.
Mm-hmm.
Just like comedy has a singular focus, which is to make you laugh.
Sure.
But with science fiction, like, what's the point?
I feel like science fiction is about making you examine society and or technology.
That's a broad mandate.
It is. But making you laugh, that's pretty broad.
I suppose. But, you know, a science fiction story could make you laugh, like Alamagusa, the dad joke of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was questioning myself, you know, what am I looking for when I grab something off the shelf? When I want science fiction, what is it that I'm after?
I like ideas in science fiction. I like things that make me think about stuff that I haven't thought about before and maybe think about something that I have thought about for, but in different ways.
I think that is what I'm going for. Looking at some of the things I've been consuming that might fall under the sci-fi banner, I'm watching Ahsoka, as most Star Wars fans are probably right now.
Right, but that's science fantasy or space opera is what it's called, because a lot of the things that are in that are stories that could have been told in the 1700s, or they could have been told, you could just change things around and it's still pretty much the same story. Instead of them on galleons, they're on spaceships.
I think when it says a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it's giving you a very strong signal before anything's happened that it is a fairy tale.
Yeah.
You know, that this is, it's the same as Once Upon a Time. That is the spirit of this. It's not science fiction.
No.
It's not a reaction to plausible science.
Mm-hmm.
It would still get classed as science fiction because it has spaceships.
Yeah, I don't
and
feel
laser
that
beams.
That's quite right. But we were talking about earlier The Expanse.
Yeah, and I'm finally catching up with it. I only just have a few left to watch that we've been savoring because I liked it so much. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to end.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the closest to what I would say is science fiction, in that it does explore ways that we would be affected by expansion out into the solar system.
And technology, and kind of taking what technology we have and social trends that are going on now and extrapolating out into our future to think about what kind of world we're going to be living in if things are progressing in this way. And obviously it's subjective. It's not hard science. This isn't necessarily the way things are going to be, but it's a possible future for us. And it makes us look at our lives and our society and the way things are going. Maybe we need to make changes. Maybe we don't, you know, and that's kind of what I think science fiction is about.
But I don't know if The Expanse is about that, actually. That's the interesting thing, is that I feel like it might have more in common with Star Wars than what you're talking about in some respects, because it doesn't really reflect on how that, it just shows us a possibility of the trajectory of our technology and our world building. And then it goes, guess what? The more things change, the more they stay the same, because it is Mars versus Earth.
Political.
There's asymmetrical warfare. Mm-hmm. It's political. It's action. It's World War II stories, like, hey, we just got to take out this gun so that, you know, this group of people can advance. Or it shows how both sides have a point but can get carried away because they didn't communicate well, or something like that. So it doesn't necessarily make me feel...
Gosh, then, yeah. Is that all stories?
You know
stories?
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're kind of old stories, but the science fiction element of it that is cool is like, oh, the Belters didn't grow up in Earth's atmosphere, so they're really physically different, and they can't be here under that gravity. And they take great advantage of things like, hey, we didn't lock down that toolbox before we went into these heavy G maneuvers, and now, you know, saws and screwdrivers are flying around and might kill us. So some of that science fiction reality they use to great effect how space travel might actually be in the future. But overall, it feels like these are classic stories of
I think you're
war.
Right about that, because it's not about the technology. The technology is just the setting for these stories of relationships and politics and...
Yeah.
And war. So, yeah.
And I've been rewatching 2001, which I had to do over about a month because it's so long and insane. I cannot believe that that is a huge movie when it feels more like Twin Peaks The Return to me than any kind of conventional, you know, multiplex flick. It's there are parts of that where sonic palettes stretch on for so long, it really tests your patience. Having the control at home to be able to turn it off.
Yeah.
I never saw the movie in the theater.
No. And, well, neither of us were born when that movie came out.
No.
And we got to remember that there was nothing like that before.
Yeah, nothing at all.
So when that movie came out, that blew people away. That was like, whoa. Even though it was this kind of mood piece, like you're saying, there was just, what, 5-minute scenes of people just kind of walking around or floating and doing stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we joked about that person running on a treadmill getting cut out of the movie when we did our Arthur C. Clarke episode this month. But there is basically a scene just like that when they introduce the main character that has to deal with Hal. Mm-hmm. He's just running around in circles to show how the gravity works in that space station. It's a really revolutionary movie, and it still looks really beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And I think one of our listeners has suggested that you watch it as a few short films.
Oh, okay.
Which I think it does work well that way. Like the introduction with the sort of prehistory of man and then with them finding the monolith and how the first conflict happened. That's its own movie.
Yeah.
Then there's kind of the real impressionistic one of the space travel and what that's like. Oh, and then there's the actual movie you think about with 2001.
Yeah. With Hal and the astronauts and the mission and the,
And the way that Hal develops and the way he thinks that the humans are a threat to the mission and murders them all and is it this disembodied voice who's trying to control things. And because the emotions were put in there to help us deal with the artificial intelligence, they're asking the question, well, wait a minute, are these emotions real or not? You know, Hal expresses fear as he's being dismantled. Now that's science fiction. That makes you wonder about artificial intelligence and how it's going to interact with us and when does it become dangerous. And those, I think, might be the closest I've gotten in this media I've been consuming in that genre to actual, the definition that Asimov and these guys were putting forth.
Mm-hmm.
I also watched a little of Electric Dreams, which are adaptations of Philip K. Dick stories. It's an anthology show. Did you watch any of that?
No.
It's on Amazon. It's pretty good. But it made me think that might be closer to what personally appeals to me in the genre. Like as a little kid, what I liked and what I thought about, aside from Star Wars or Star Trek with science fiction, was something more along the lines of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Because as you said, what you're after when you reach for the shelf for that is something that's going to expand your mind a little bit, make you think about society, make you think about the nature of your existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like those... Twilight Zone stories do that, but are those science fiction? Because a lot of times they are, as in the case of the Anything Box, more like magical realism. It's just like a little bit of, you don't need to know why this happened, but it happened, is interjected into the story. And then you go, huh, that's a new way of looking at it. And I know we kind of backed into our show title, Strange Studies of Strange Stories. We thought that sounded good and then kind of found a way to justify it.
Uh-huh.
But the more I think about it, the strange story is what I'm talking about. That's not science fiction necessarily. It's more of something that estranges you from your own existence so that you can examine your own existence.
Right.
I feel like sometimes that's actually what we're talking about. It's not science fiction. It's a strange story.
I think you're right.
Now, does Fire in the Sky fall into that category? Maybe not. It's definitely a strange movie. Let's talk about it a little.
Yeah. Fire in the Sky is a 1993 movie directed by Robert Lieberman. Lieberman has a pretty long list of movie and TV credits, and it feels like a TV show to me,
a
made-for-TV movie. It has that kind of texture to it. The screenplay was adapted by Tracy Tormé of Star Trek The Next Generation fame from the book The Walton Experience. So this is a biopic?
Okay.
It's based on a true story. This is the summary of the Travis Walton UFO incident from Wikipedia.
Okay, I'll read this. The Travis Walton UFO incident, that sounds so much like a band that you would see at Coachella or something, was an alleged alien abduction of American forestry worker Travis Walton by a UFO on November 5th, 1975, while he was working in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest near Snowflake, Arizona. Walton was missing for 5 days and 6 hours. After days of searching with scent dogs and helicopters, Walton says he reappeared by the side of a road near Heber, Arizona. The Walton case received mainstream publicity and remains one of the best-known alien abduction stories, while scientific skeptics consider it a hoax. So that's the story that this is based off of.
Yes. Now, the movie, A Fire in the Sky, stars Robert Patrick of T2 fame and James Garner of Rockford Files and Maverick. The guy who plays Travis Walton really feels like a dime store Paul Rudd to me. Did you get that?
Yes.
Yeah. Because like every so often I go, is that Paul Rudd? And I'm like, no, it can't be. He'd be like 15 years old or something with that.
I would be really curious to show this movie to a broad cross-section in America and see how many people say dime store Paul Rudd. Because I know you pretty well. We grew up in the same area. Yeah. You know. Would everybody say that?
I think so. He really does seem like Paul Rudd. Also, a 20-something Elliot from E.T. is in there. Henry Thomas.
Yeah.
And just to put a little cherry on top, good old Craig Schaefer, who played Boone in Nightbreed.
It's funny because that is more or less how I described the movie to Heather. I put it on. She goes, what are you watching? I was like, oh, it's Fire in the Sky. You ever see it? No. I go, well, it's got T2 in it. That's what I said. Elliot's in there. Rockford's in there. She goes, Rockford's in there? I was like, yeah. James Garner and Nightbreed's in there. Like, who's Nightbreed? I go, you know, the dime store Josh Brolin. She's like, oh, him. I love him. So mean.
One thing that I discovered in looking up this, because I recognized Schaefer from other stuff, and I'm like TV shows and things. But when I was looking at his IMDb, there was a movie, like the first thing he was in 1984 called Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
Yes.
You got to read the synopsis.
I'm going to read the synopsis because I didn't even know about this till you wrote it in here, which is crazy to me. Here's the synopsis. A guitar-shaped spaceship and robot 1359, voiced by Peter Cullen, search the universe for the source of rock and roll music. After discounting the planets Teldar and Malox, they come across Akarima. After listening to a dance musical performance of When the Rain Begins to Fall, featuring Pia Zadora and Jermaine Jackson, portraying members of rival gangs who fall in love, a la Romeo and Juliet, Robot 1359 discounts this one too. The last planet left to visit is Earth. So wait a minute, the robot sees the performance and goes, no, rock and roll did not start here.
I don't know. I haven't seen the movie. I watched the trailer and it is something to behold. It's amazing.
Yeah, it looks pretty great.
I never knew it existed until just 10 minutes ago when I was doing these notes. So
see, now I have to watch this because I need to know if the robot gave the movie a bad review within the movie.
Oh, right.
Because that's pretty, wow.
The special appearance by Jermaine Jackson, that's kind of amazing.
It's amazing, and I am a Jermaine Jackson fan, and I was back then. He had a self-titled album. The single from it was Dynamite. I think I've talked about this before, but there was a song on that album called Escape from the Planet of the Ant-Men.
What?
That was sort of trading in on the science fiction Return of the Jedi fever of the time.
Oh.
Because it's got like this voiceover at the beginning of it that's this Jabba the Hutt-esque kind of guy. It's totally nuts, but when I was 10, I thought it was the greatest song ever written. I really did love it.
Wow, okay.
Like, non-ironically, I just thought it was amazing. Anyway, back to Fire in the Sky.
We're not going to go too deep into the plot here, but I want to go over the basics of it. It said at the top, it's about these loggers who are out one night and they see a flying saucer really low, you know, just almost landed, but not quite on the ground.
And they're blue collar, don't have a lot of money.
Right.
You know, all six have to pile in one pickup truck together to go to work. Not all of them get along, because I think Nightbreed, he's a drifter.
Yeah.
And there's almost a chainsaw fight when they're out working, which is not what I expected out of this movie.
No.
But after a hard day of work and an almost chainsaw fight, and they're driving home, they see that saucer, which isn't really, you say flying saucer, but it's kind of like an inverted volcano erupting or
it's
something.
Bizarre, yeah.
It's really bizarre. Dime store Paul Rudd is a very live-for-the-moment guy, as Paul Rudd would be in the same role. In fact, he's dating T2's daughter. There was a scene right in the beginning of this TV movie-esque plot.
That's T2? That's his daughter? I thought his daughter was like little kid. I thought he had little kid daughter.
No, right in the beginning, it was so weird, dude, because dime store Paul Rudd and him are joking around together in the beginning of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Well, T2's mad because his wife just hollered at him for not making enough money.
Right.
And then Paul Rudd's like, hold on a second. And he climbs up the side of the house and he goes up to visit T2's daughter because they're courting.
Huh? I thought it was somebody. I thought it was like his neighbor or something. I didn't think it was him. Honestly, I wasn't paying much attention.
Well, look, it doesn't make any sense, because if that was my daughter and this guy just climbed up and started romancing her right in front of me, I'd pull him down off the house and beat his ass.
But
it didn't make any sense.
But
the teacher was cool with it.
He's got like little kids as well. As like, I don't get it. Anyway, never mind.
Well, this whole movie is operating on a weird level of reality.
Sure.
But Travis being Travis, when he sees that flying saucer that night when they're coming back, he gets out of the truck to get a closer look.
When he gets closer to it, he's looking up at it in awe and majesty. He's really impressed by it. And then this light thing zaps him and he just hits the ground. You could see smoke coming out of his mouth.
It's like a big flashlight beam and it drops him pretty hard.
So they drive away in a panic thinking Travis is dead. But Robert Patrick, T2, comes back out of his senses and he's like, oh, we can't just leave him there. We got to go back for him. And everybody else is so scared. They make him drop them off outside and he drives back on his own. But Travis is gone. He's not there. Now, James Garner comes in as a police investigator from Montana, and the story takes place in Arizona, to try and figure out what's actually happened. All the loggers tell the alien story, but the town and James Garner don't believe them.
T2 keeps saying, hey, guys, you got to keep your story straight. So it's really weird. It's like they're trying to play this level where you as the audience don't necessarily believe them either. Like there was some foul play and they messed up Travis and they're using this thing to cover it up.
Yeah,
I thought, is there a level of that going on?
But there isn't.
No.
They want them to take a lie detector test. They do. They pass. James Garner still doesn't believe them, even though he was the one pushing for this. Says, oh, no, this guy knows his stuff. This is the real lie detector. And then he just ignores all of that.
Right.
5 days later, Travis shows up in the woods and he's naked and he's also pretty catatonic. Like he can't really communicate and he's freaked out.
Yeah. He actually calls them from a phone booth at a gas station. When they get there, he's crouched in a corner all naked, clearly traumatized. Yeah. And it's really weird that everybody just wants him to get back to regular life pretty quickly. And the whole maybe these guys did something wrong plot is just dropped at that point.
Yeah.
They throw a big party for him, like a welcome back party with everybody there. And he's like, oh, hold on. I'm going to go sneak off and hallucinate because everybody's freaking him out because he's got the craziest PTSD of all time.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's freaking out. He's hiding under a kitchen table. And then T2's daughter comes in and is like, what's wrong with you?
Eventually, he remembers what happens. And then we get a horrific flashback scene, which is him being on this alien ship. And it's pretty disturbing.
It's pure nightmare fuel. And that's the reason that this movie is famous, because of that short 10-15 minute sequence at the end. It has all the logic and physics of a nightmare. He's moving around as if there's no gravity, but in an odd way.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost accidental that the aliens get him. He's in this weird gelatinous prison cell that he splooshes out of. He accidentally breaks into another one and there's another body in there.
Yeah, it's a dead body, though. So I wonder, it made me think that they thought he was dead or something and he wasn't dead.
But then he sort of floats around until these aliens find him and then they just strap him down and put this weird membrane over him.
Uh-huh.
And then there's eye stuff. And it really is horrifying to watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that's almost the short film that everything else was built around. The other movie this reminds me of a little bit is When a Stranger Calls. Is that the name of it?
Is that the, why don't you check on the baby?
Yeah, have you checked on the children? The call's coming from inside the house, that movie. It's that all happens at the beginning of the movie. It's like its own short film. And then they had to figure out a way to build it out to make it into a feature.
Yeah.
And this is similar, where there's a really effective short film in it.
Yeah.
And then a strange TV movie surrounding it.
I mean, I was kind of interested in it. Robert Patrick, he's pretty good.
I will agree with you that the actors are all really good in it.
Yeah.
And effective. They didn't have a lot to work with. I mean, I thought that maybe the reason it was them versus society a little bit in the movie was because people were going to disprove their account or propose different theories.
Yeah.
And that didn't really happen. So I wonder if there are holes to be poked in the actual, the true story, quote unquote, true story that this is based off of. Yeah. Because this is a whole subdivision of science fiction that is kind of a hybrid with urban legend. Are there aliens among us?
Right.
Are there ancient alien civilizations who visited here? Is the government covering this up?
So this movie ends with an epilogue that's 2 years later. Travis is okay, and he's moved on for some reason. But the T-1000 is divorced and living out in the woods with long hair and a beard. I don't know why. Why is the guy that was abducted okay, and then he's not?
He's not, and then he didn't even know that his Travis had children, and
so those are his grandkids.
Those are his grandkids.
So that makes a bit more sense to me now. Why he he seemed to really care about those kids when he told them about
Oh yeah, he's related to them. Well, you think he would have heard, but
well, Travis takes them back to the site of the abduction, and they have this heart to heart that resolves nothing. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just blew past the end of the movie and went straight to this next conversation because I like forgot that it mattered.
Yeah, that's the end of the movie.
It's really bizarre. I think the aliens are actually all of the humans in it because their behavior makes no sense at all.
So despite its popularity, it didn't do very well. It had a $15 million budget, but only made $19.9 million domestically.
It's a profit.
It is a profit. Well, I don't know if that factors in advertising and all that stuff as well. A lot of times those numbers don't reflect that. But at the time, I didn't see it. I remember seeing the commercials for it, thinking, ooh, that's pretty scary.
I don't have an alien fixation.
No.
So I didn't watch The X-Files much. I liked The X-Files when it was Monster of the Week show about some horror stuff. That's what I like.
Yeah.
And then if it was an episode that was like, oh, the government's covering some stuff up, I just felt like, I don't care.
Mm.
But that's not to write it off, because clearly a lot of people love this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and a lot of people believe it as a reality. Aliens and UFOs have been part of the zeitgeist in America and maybe Western civilization since Roswell, with unidentified flying objects being reported, in World War II. Mm-hmm. There are accounts before World War II. There's like an ancient Roman guy that wrote some stuff about aliens coming down in an alien abduction. There's some 11th century Chinese report of it as well. But, it's not a big thing until like right after World War II. But during the war, they were flying balls of fire that were reported by both the Allies and the Axis powers. And they were called Foo Fighters.
That's right.
That's where the band got the name from, are these fireball things that they saw here. So, you learn something. Now, there's many logical explanations for these incidents, but these kinds of reports are the things that really started getting the ball rolling on this whole thing.
With the technological advances that come after the 40s, the sky is full of way more stuff suddenly.
Right. And in 1947, the Air Force started documenting unexplained aerial phenomena in something called Project Sign. Mm-hmm. And Project Sign was replaced in 1949 with Project Grudge. And then that was replaced in 1952 with Project Blue Book, which I think a lot of people have heard of. And that lasted until 1969. I think it's really important that people need to think about the time period, because the Cold War was in full effect and science fiction was super popular at the time.
Yeah.
So that kind of frames what people are thinking about and what's going on.
You're more likely to be scanning the world for something like a flying saucer.
Yeah.
Given what's in entertainment at the time.
But, dude, check it out. It's 2023 and alien fever is back.
Yeah, it's had a resurgence, huh?
There was a congressional testimony in the United States about cover-up claims. That happened recently, mid-July of this year, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Three men testified in front of a congressional committee, one of whom is David Grush, a former U.S. intelligence officer. He claims the U.S. government harbors, quote, intact and partially intact and non-human pilots. He claims that the U.S. government conducted a multi-decade program which collected and attempted to reverse engineer alien technology from crashed ships.
I see you have this from The Guardian. Mm-hmm. Moreover, Grush, who led analysis of unexplained anomalous phenomena within a U.S. Department of Defense agency until 2023, said he had encountered people who have been harmed or injured in the course of the government's efforts to keep this alien program secret. Grush told the committee that after going public with his allegations, he had feared for his life.
And Sean Kirkpatrick, he's the head of the Pentagon's UFO office, said this about this testimony.
I cannot let yesterday's hearing pass without sharing how insulting it was to the officers of the Department of Defense and intelligence community. To be clear, AARO, All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, has yet to find any credible evidence to support the allegations of any reverse engineering program for non-human technology.
Another guy that testified was Ryan Graves, a former U.S. Navy pilot, as well as this fella David Fravor, former U.S. Navy commander. That is the rank Riker had in TNG.
Oh, well, okay. Commander. I'm gonna believe that guy then, yeah.
Both of whom tell their direct experiences with UAPs. And everything that Grush said was hearsay. None of the things that he talked about, he saw firsthand. It was all things that other people told him. And all I can think of, and what a lot of other people are saying, is like, okay, cool, you said all this stuff. Where's the evidence? And so far, there isn't any.
Exactly.
Well, guess what? Mexican Congress, it's got some evidence for you. An alien body.
This is circling back around to what... yes, that's right. So there are members of Mexican Congress who are aliens? That's what happened?
No.
Oh, okay.
In the defense of Mexican Congress, they didn't do it, but...
No. They had somebody presented something. I'm being... obviously, that's not what I think happened.
Right.
Somebody presented some evidence before Mexican Congress.
Yes, that's right. Supposedly found in Peru, a body was brought forward by an alien believer, Jaime Masson. He claims that this alien body has been carbon dated to be about 1,000 years old, and the remains are not related to anything on Earth. I did find the organization or the lab that did this work. They did the carbon dating, but they said they didn't do any DNA. So wherever he's getting his DNA stuff is, who knows? And our U.S. Navy pilot that testified, he didn't even buy it. He said, yesterday's demonstration was a huge step backward for the issue. I am deeply disappointed by this unsubstantiated stunt.
The people who testified in the U.S. don't believe the testimony from Mexican Congress.
Now, 1,000 years ago in Peru, there was a custom of mummifying deceased children. Mm-hmm. And if you look at a picture of this thing, it actually just looks like something made by a child. It doesn't look like a human child or any kind. Its proportions are all weird.
Oh, you thought maybe it was a mummified child.
Yeah, and that's what
but
some people suggested.
No, it just looks like it was made by a mummified child.
Like it looks like something a kid, like a 12-year-old would make that approximates like a human form. So it's pretty nuts. And I think David Spergel, who was Princeton University's former head of astrophysics, sums it up pretty well here. He goes, if you have something strange, make samples available to the world scientific community and we'll see what's there.
There you go.
So like if you really had an alien body, be cutting off samples, sending it off to all of the universities, going, that's how science works, is you get a bunch of people to look at your data and see if it's legit. And if it stands, if it withstands that, you know, peer review, then it's the real deal. But the guy's not even doing that stuff.
When you see things, and I don't know if it's an X-Files thing or not, but you'll see like a poster and it says, I want to believe.
Right.
It's like the most non-scientific thing you can possibly say. I want to bias myself.
Exactly.
And I think that that's why these things become news, because people want to believe that they're true. Although I don't know why. Well, I guess it's just sexier because they are like humans. That's the whole thing, right? The aliens are some kind of civilization. They've had an impact on humanity. They're intelligent and they're proxy humans, and that they are just like us, except for some key differences. Whereas it's not really in the news, you know, like I was only recently finding out about Enceladus, which is that moon from around Saturn that has plumes of water blasting out into the cosmos. It's mostly an icy planet, but what do we need for there to have for life to exist in another ecosystem? You're probably going to need water that's liquid. Mm-hmm. You need a heating source. You need salt. They've flown a probe through those plumes and all those things are present. There's some kind of ocean down there. And I would guess that around the vents that are blasting that heat out into the water, I bet there's life in there. I bet it's microbial, or maybe it's some like there are in the deepest parts of the ocean. You know, there's no light there, so they would probably be blind creatures who are perhaps bioluminescent.
Yeah.
But I think that it's most likely that that's the kind of life that we're going to encounter first. We're going to find out that there's some kind of tardigrade-like creature floating around on Enceladus. But I guess that doesn't make for good news copy.
No. And personally, the idea of alien abductions just never made sense to me. Like these beings who have figured out how to traverse the gulf of space, travel faster than the speed of light, aren't clever enough to study humans in a non-invasive way.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's something that we're doing as a species already. Humans studying animals, like we're trying our best not to be invasive into the study of animals. You know,
except for Dr. Moreau vivisecting like crazy. But no, yeah, you're right. This is more like a Dr. Moreau experience, what happens to the guy on fire in the
and
sky.
They just seem stupid. Like these aliens are really, this is the best you can do? Like this, and why do they ditch him? Why do they, you know, throw him back? And like,
well, that movie does not make an argument in support of that person's account, because it is nightmare-like.
Yeah.
Like it, like I said, it follows the physics of a nightmare. So if that was described or you watched that, you go, you passed out or went unconscious or were in a coma and you had a terrible nightmare.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really resemble what I think that would probably really be like.
Right. And I don't discount anybody's experience. Like, people say that these things have happened to them, and I don't think that most of these people are lying about it. I think they did have something happen, but I don't think it's what they are saying it is, like that it's an alien abduction.
Well, so you are discounting it, though.
Well,
you're like, I just don't tell them.
Like, I'm sure they had a real experience. They're not liars. I'm not saying that they're liars. I'm saying that something happened to these people.
I think some of them are liars.
Well, some of them might be liars. But, you know, like, there's tons of Navy guys that have seen crazy stuff flying around. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of reports. There's thousands of reports. They're like, yeah, this thing came and moved around in a way that I've never seen an aircraft move around, and that it flew away.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I think that's legit. You don't know what it is. But to go to the conclusion that aliens, it just feels wrong to me, could be lots of different things. It could be the old gods coming back.
It could be the old gods coming back.
Humans from a parallel dimension that have more advanced technology than us. Just to go to alien, come on.
Well, I know a lot of Navy guys that disagree with you. I'm going to throw that around anytime I want to make a call to credibility. Well, a lot of Navy guys say something different the way you're saying it.
But that's from what the guys that have testified that I've seen. There's some video of, some aircraft that was going around a couple of years ago when the United States government had to release all the Freedom of Information Act. They had to release all the UFO stuff that they collected. And so there was a bunch of it. And there was like some weird video of crazy things moving around through the air. They're like, we don't know what it is.
Sure. I mean, I think it's the same as haunted houses and stuff, you know, where you go because you don't know what it is, doesn't. You can't make that huge leap to little green men. Just like if, you know, you don't know why a door closes, you can't make a huge leap to that grandma's dead ghost, flying around trying to resolve who took the sugar.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, I'm open to hear about people's experience. If anybody has seen a UFO or been abducted, let me hear about it. I'd love to hear about that stuff.
Yes. And I know what you're saying. I don't just discount anybody's account of what happened to them.
Yeah.
Out of hand. But I'm unlikely to believe that this is what happened.
Yeah.
I'm unlikely to think that Fire in the Sky is a true story, even though it says it's a true story. I checked with some Navy guys. Yeah. That Village People song in the Navy is about going to research some facts by getting expert testimony.
Yes, that's true.
That's what that's about.
That's a true story. I just want to thank all you backers, all you high-level backers for doing this. Hopefully this stuff is entertaining to you.
And we'll talk to you soon. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lack, and you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories.